Oh, and welcome back. Hope you've had a really nice breakfast, cup of tea, relax. And now I was just going to say that from this morning session, if you have any questions, we're going to look at those. But first of all, we're going to introduce the other two people on the course. Gabriel, I'm going to introduce Gabriel as somebody who I know very well and who was a director of Jamyang Leeds. Many years ago, she was responsible for moving that centre into, well, from a house into the centre that we began, or she set up, and many other people helping her. But that was the start of the Jamyang Leeds Centre, which has now grown and grown, and we've got a big centre in the centre of Leeds now. So thank you very much for all that, Gabriel. What we'd like to know is just a little bit about you, your practice, and maybe why you're here. I don't know. I know why you're here. You can to support. And over to you, Gabriel, please. Can you unmute yourself and just give us a little introduction, please?
I'm Gabriel Hamilton. I live in Leeds. I've known Lou since 1970s. As far as Buddhism is concerned, it from a very young age, back in my early 20s, it kept presenting itself in different ways, from boyfriends giving me a book, from stuntmen teaching me how to chant, all sorts of different ways. So that what was interesting was that but people come from different places, and you realize that you know more than others do about one sector, but some people know, you flip. So as far as Jamyang Leeds was concerned, I was just the right person at the right time. Really, that's what Andy Wistrick said, because he thought Lama Zopret got it wrong, but actually, no, I don't think he has, Gabriel. But and then you move away and you do other stuff. It taught me a lot. It taught me doing it. It taught me that, first of all, masses of my skills in my job are transferable. You found that, didn't you? When we did call sheets and stuff like that for events, so much of what we do is transferable. And now I'm a gardener, I look after rabbits, and I listen to people. That's what I do, isn't it? I have people who've got, well, a particular person who's in a bad way mentally, and she comes to me once a week, and she pours out, and I listen. And that's my practice at the moment because of
Excellent.
COVID.
Excellent.
But when COVID, I'm being self-isolated for over a year, and it's like being on a long retreat.
It is, and everybody's been put in that place, which is quite unusual, isn't it?
Yeah. And at
Everybody's.
first it was like, and then I was like, oh, okay, this is where we are. That's fine. Deal with
Great. Well,
okay, that's who I am.
that's great, Gabriel. Thank you very, very much. And I'm glad to hear you practicing with
Well, not much.
that. I think it is. That's all part of it, anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's an activism. It's like being a digital warrior, isn't it? You do other stuff, but
Okay.
it's still to do with that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Olia, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us where you are and where you are with Buddhist practice? Do you want to unmute yourself?
Sorry, Lou, are you talking to me?
Yes, Olia.
Yes, hello. I did that in the morning.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Oh, Okay, have we done everybody then?
No. I think it's Craig as well.
Oh, Craig.
I haven't spoken.
It's because I talked to you first thing, Craig. I thought we'd done your introduction. Oh, come on, Craig, it's your turn.
Thank you. My 5 minutes of fame.
That's it.
So I'm Craig, and this is my first retreat with Land of Joy, so yes, quite exciting, and I'm really enjoying it already. I kind of had been introduced to Buddhism in Thailand when I was traveling there. The first time I went to do some volunteer work, it was in 2014, but it was intriguing, but I didn't really open up to it, wasn't really understanding it. And then it was only when I went back a few years later and I went to this open day, and it was just an introduction to meditation thing. And I remember doing this 10-minute guided meditation and not being with my breath, not being with one breath for the entire 10 minutes. And it was really exposing, you know. I thought, gosh, really? So I have no control over this mind, you know. I said, but then the monk looked so joyful, happy. I thought, well, if that's the result, it's probably worth just sticking with it. And he said, please go away. You don't expect results today. Go away and keep trying it. So I did. And I remember like a few weeks later, just having maybe a minute of peace. And it was such a revelation that was possible. I'd always been quite an avoider, you know, of my mind, just keeping myself constantly distracted or stimulated, and also maybe drinking a lot, smoking, you know, anything really to dull. So this last few years has been a real journey for me. I think that actually resulted in a lot of lifestyle changes. I stopped drinking, stopped smoking, took up yoga, you know, but it also brought a lot of things to the surface, you know, because you create space, things will bubble up, which later led to me starting counseling and real inner sort of journey. But it's practice really developed. Initially I only really knew about the mindfulness concentration meditations, and I remember going to a Vipassana retreat and finding it really quite a disturbing experience, because I didn't have that compassion wing, you know. I didn't have that and I didn't really know about that. And later learned about metta bhavana, cultivation of loving kindness practice, really brought a different element. And And now, I'm really interested in the tantric practices. I think I really find, how to explain, like when I'm doing visualization, like the other practices, like the mindfulness practices, sort of like leveling everything, you know, clearing everything. And I find the visualization is like almost like it's building the kind of mind that I aspire to. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's just, I find it very useful. Very, very useful to use the imagination to cultivate the states of mind, you know, that are skillful and wholesome. Yeah. I've got quite a busy mind, so it's good to direct it. Yeah.
Well, we've all got busy minds, Craig.
Yeah.
It's just when we start, most people don't notice it, but once we start to meditate or do any of those sort of practices, we start to notice how busy our mind is. Well, that's interesting. So you are doing some yoga, so the breathing and things like this, you have been introduced to.
Yes. Sure. I hadn't done the yogic breathing for a while. I used to teach a class once a week, and so I used to explore it a lot more, you know, different. Yeah. So I hadn't done that for quite a while, so I really enjoyed that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, it's a really useful part of it, and I hope we'll sort of appreciate that through the weekend, what a tool it is. The next thing we're going to go, thank you so much for all of you. It sounds like you're just right for the intro course. And
Lou, can I just interrupt? There's somebody, Anna, who's just joined. I don't know, Anna, are you there? Can you hear us?
I can't see anybody, but well,
Anna, can do you want to unmute?
Hello,
hi, welcome. Hi.
Sorry, I realized that if I switch my camera all the time, I will run out of battery. So you see me now, and then if you don't mind, I'm going to switch it off. So my name is Anna. I'm very nice to meet you all. I'm very interested in the Tantra. And the reason why I'm interested is because I'm fascinated by Tibetan Buddhism. My first approach to Buddhism was because I lived in China for quite a while. And then I traveled a lot in Asia. So I discovered how Buddhism just takes different forms and different rituals everywhere. And when I got back to Europe, I tried to incorporate meditation, yoga, and practice in my daily life, even though it's a bit hard not having a temple nearby. But it's good to have this sort of retreats where you could just refresh your mind and get to know a little bit more. So, yeah, this is me.
Lovely. Anna, that's great. Thank you very much and welcome.
Thank you.
I hope this weekend is going to be useful for us all, you know, because it's all about learning. And as Anna said, you know, there's so many different forms of Tantra. And just to try and demystify it a little bit, I think Gabriel was saying that to me. And I remember when I began.
Lou. Apologies. I just I don't know if everyone, but I don't hear you well. I'm not sure why it's
really.
Yeah, suddenly. I don't know. Maybe it's me. I just wanted to check if everyone else hears Lou very well. But I just
thanks for asking. If you have any headphones, it works perfectly with headphones. I think Craig and I have got them on, and it's fine. I think for other, if I don't have them on, it's really really quiet from on my computer. Do you have any headphones?
I'll try to get them. In the morning it was perfect. It was very good, and I can hear everyone else very well. It's just for some reason I stopped hearing Lou.
Thanks, Lou. I don't know if you've touched anything by mistake or whatever, but
no, I haven't changed anything.
Okay, maybe if you're a bit nearer to
find the headphones. Yeah.
Okay. Can you be a bit nearer?
That.
Okay.
But thanks for mentioning, Alia, and thank you for mentioning. No, it's important. Important.
We need to know. So, you know, you can hear us. And what I was going to say next is, actually, this is from this morning's session. And so are there any questions just to do with this morning's session, to do with the pranayama, to do with the lamrim meditation, and also we touched on the loving kindness meditation? If we can just keep it to that, because the next section we're going to start talking about the Tantra. Are there any questions? If you just stick your little hand up, a finger up, then you know we can do take those. Gabriel, what you got?
I'm unmuted.
Okay. What's the question?
Right. It's not a question. It's a statement.
Okay.
You said Chenrezig was male.
Aha.
Chenrezig is female. Why has she got all those hands that women can multitask? For me, I was like, what are you saying, male? She's always been a female.
Nice. Okay.
She's a woman.
Well, when we get into mind and into Tantra, Gabriel, there's no gender in the mind. There is no gender.
Well, that's fair enough. But, you know,
here we are.
I'd like to point out that you went and I went, what?
Yeah, because this emanation, the four-armed emanation of Chenrezig and the thousand arm, they are in a male aspect. Simply that. We've got Tara, green Tara and white Tara comes from the tears of Chenrezig, you know, so you can say that's the female aspect. But, you know, these are just aspects. And when we get into Tantra, there isn't really any male and female anymore, you know, because you're in that soft body.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a gender. Now I really know what you're getting at, and this will come through Tantra, because there's no doubt there's lots of patriarchal baggage, you know, within all systems, you know, it's unavoidable. But what do we focus on, you know? I think that's the point here. And when I see Chenrezig, especially this beautiful image, yes, he is called him in this manifestation, but you know, to me, it's male, female. It's just everything. There's just no gender. Yeah. Beautiful. And it's inspiring. So it's a good
place. The whole time, all the Chen races I've seen in China and everything, in my mind, constantly female. Just because it made sense. Because she's got so many arms and she does so much.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, look, we've all got male and female aspects in us.
That's true.
You know, really, we shouldn't really be putting them into one drawer. And
another. Actually, that's absolutely true. Yeah. That's true.
And, it's a good point, because these are all the things we want to talk about, you know, and, you know, we're going to see this in Tantra. When you get further on in Tantra, there's even more of it, you know, but really, I just keep in my mind that when there is no gender in the mind, you know, so these are images for us to connect to. And, you know, because we're unlikely to see them ourselves absolutely in this life, you know, we'll visualize and we'll get very close, we'll get near to the deity. But, you know, in fact, we're just relating to a sense, an essence of the, because there's lots of different tantric deities, and they're for lots of different minds, you know, and they go from the very peaceful, very beautiful, to the most wrathful, grotesque, you know, all to deal with different aspects of our mind. So we'll call them he, she.
Definitely.
Thank you. Are there any more questions from this morning's practice?
I have one, Lou. Would you please explain the mantra characters, like, of each character, what it means in the mantra?
Okay. We're going to come to that in the visualizations. But I don't mind sort of. I mean, I saw there's an actual, you know, from the Sanskrit. Each syllable, om represents the body, mani represents jewel, hemi is the lotus, and hum is the union. And basically it's the union of compassion and wisdom, and that's what the mantra is about. You know, some of you are aware, the two wings that get us to enlightenment. There's the method compassion, and then there's the wisdom side. So Om Mani Padme Hum represents all of that in a non-dual way. So it's quite beautiful mantra. I didn't realise the depth of it. And another way it's called is the jewel in the lotus, wisdom and compassion, non-dual. So that's really nice. That's the heart of it, isn't it? Does that answer your question, Alia?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Perfect. And Craig, did you want to say something, Craig? Did you want to ask?
Two things now. Just one comment about the gender. I completely agree. It's genderless. Anyone can aspire to the qualities of Chen Ruzi. But I think from my understanding, traditionally, of the two aspects, the two wings, wisdom and compassion, the wisdom aspect is seen as sort of the feminine, the sort of spacious, I almost see it like the womb, almost like from which things sort of arise or grow within. And then the compassion aspect, I believe, is traditionally pictured as the male, the active sort of energy, kind of, again, we all embody all of that. But that kind of did resonate with me, yeah. But on a vision, on an imaginative level, yeah.
That is the reason for all the symbolism, is for it to resonate with us. And I think what happens is that, you know, people who are in the tradition, Tibet, or, you know, in Tibetan tradition or in the Buddhist tradition, they're quite used to all these symbols.
Mm.
You know, we haven't been brought up with that, and that's why I think there's a lot of mystery there. But yeah, the symbolism is quite important. We have to, I think, also take steps with that, because when you look at some of the sadhanas, there's just a huge amount in there. And if you try and take it all on board in your meditations, it's almost too much. So you go step by step with that, you know, and build up your relationship to those symbols and what really resonates with you, you know. And you said you had another question.
Yeah, it was just another. I really liked your reminder about the meaning of the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra, the wisdom and compassion combined, that symbolism of the jewel in the lotus, which again is like that, isn't it? The lotus, the wisdom is that spacious thing, and then arising from that. But another thing I was introduced to was the six parts, breaking that down into Om Mani Padme Hum, and then each one relating to a different color, relates to a different realm of existence. And they're a different poison or different klesha that really embodies that. So, for example, the Om is white, relates to the godly realm. Klesha is pride. The antidote is equanimity. And the paramita or perfection that arises when you apply the antidote is generosity. And each one has a different thing. I had it on here. You can't see that. But, yeah.
Maybe you can share that.
So. I could share that. It's very interesting. And I use that when I'm doing the sadhana,
yeah.
So when I'm going round the different syllables on the lotus, you know, and imagine sending the antidote to the different realms. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. And because, you know, we're dealing with all realms and all minds, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that. So I
yeah.
see that.
I'll take a picture of it at some point over the weekend and send it, yeah.
Share it with the group, that's really great. So that's the mantra, and we'll be working with that. But, you know, just as we said, there's different levels, and you really have to get what resonates with your mind, not what, you know, confuses your mind as well. You know, if it's just a light for you, this is what Paula always goes back, you know, to, is just feeling it is also important. So it's not just coming from your head, it's also really coming from your heart. Lovely. Good questions. Is there anything else from the Lam Rim meditation? Is everybody comfortable basically with the Lam Rim meditation we did? It's okay. Yeah, it's nice to just follow those steps. And the reason we do that is because, you know, sutra is the, you know, the training ground and where we prepare ourselves for tantra. And sutra is really where we do a lot of the work. And, you know, then when we've got that base, we keep going with that. Lama Tsongkhapa did 50% tantra practice right up to the end of his life and 50% of sutra practice, and that's why each morning I do a Lam Rim meditation. Many people do it because we need to keep that as our base, otherwise we're going to be flying off, and it might all be very nice experiences, but it's not really going to do the job. And what is the job? Actually, it leads us on to what is tantra. And, you know, these are yogic practices, which really work on the subtle body. And they're really working to gain control in some way so that we can use the channels and use the winds and the drops. Because in sutra, we're really working more on a gross level. To clear our afflictions, you know, this stuff that's causing all the suffering. And, you know, we can work it all out conceptually, but we still carry on doing things, you know, in a crazy way, don't we? And we think, why am I doing that? You know, because, you know, I know it doesn't make sense, but, you know, I talked about it earlier on. We've been imprinting for since beginningless time in a direction that is very much towards me and this self. And, you know, we've been, you know, propping it up lifetime after lifetime. So really in Tantra, what we start to do is shake that up. And it's really skillful. And I think it's all the shape shifting you do, but you suddenly start to see that this self isn't so solid, and you see its possibilities as well. So I think if we say, what is Tantra? It's working at that level. It's working at the subtle level, and it's working at a level that's going to clear the imprints. And those are the things that will stop us getting to enlightenment. If we get rid of all the afflictive delusions and the afflictions and everything, you know, as it says on the graduated path, we can get to liberation, but that's just going to be for ourselves. And I know as a young person, being a Christian, not, you know, high church or anything, but I wasn't comfortable with, you know, me getting to heaven and all those people in hell. You know, so this sits very comfortably with my mind. Having said that, in the Sutra path, you can go right up to liberation, but they say you need the Tantra path to reach enlightenment. And the reason is because you're working at this deeper level where all those imprints are really, really, you know, they're still there. I mean, you'll find them and you think, wow, you know, I really thought I'd applied the antidotes. I really thought conceptually I'd worked that out. And still I'm doing it, you know? Tantra shakes all that up. It just, you know, puts everything up in the air and it just softens it. And you realize the reality you're looking at isn't quite the same, you know? It's not this hard, fixed thing. So I think for me, that's one of the big... just at a basic level, just shaking everything up, but at an ultimate level, it's going to clear the imprints, and you can definitely reach enlightenment on this track, on this path, and also fast. As I said earlier, it's a fast track, and the reason we want to take the fast track is we've already been building compassion up in the sutra training and practices that we've done. We've been building up the compassion. You know, and we don't stop there, you know, because that's prepared us and opened the door to Tantra. Now we're going to work on great compassion. And this is where really Chenrezig comes into his own, where we start to do the deity practice, because we want to link with that essence of compassion, and we want to develop it in ourselves, because that's the vitality of the practice and the vitality of the Mahayana, in fact. So and the method side. So we bring to the Tantra this awareness that we've learned from Sutra, that, you know, everything is empty, and there is nothing at all inherently existing. Well, we've done that really on a very conceptual level, but when we go into Tantra practice, we start to realize it in our body as well as our mind, and so it's incredibly skillful. And because it's a fast track, and we want to help beings as quickly as possible to stop suffering, that's why, you know, we need the inspiration, because it's a lot of work. There's no doubt about it, you know, and you'll only get any results if you do the practice regularly. You know, it's like driving or anything. If you just do it once a year, you're going to be pretty clunky and rusty. But if you do this practice every day, and, you know, as Gabriel was saying, you can do this practice not just in a sadhana. You can do it, you know, talking to your neighbor. You can do it in the middle of the, you know, street. You can use this practice from your heart. So it's it's just so useful. And I also think of it that once you sort of, it's almost like Chenrezig, the Buddha of compassion, is like a signpost. You know, all this time we've been going off towards self, 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 self. And suddenly here we connect with Chenrezig. And it's, to me, it's like the signpost that's suddenly taking us the right way, you know. Now we've really got, and we've also got the energy, you know, that compassion gives us, that amazing, boundless energy. And that's why we're connecting it to the Dalai Lama, because there we can see, can't we, a manifestation of compassion that's in every atom of his physical body. And, you know, look at the effect that has, and look how it crosses boundaries. Apart from, I think, the Chinese government and officials, I don't think there's anybody in the world who would say, oh, the Dalai Lama, can't stand him. You know, I think across all barriers, he is loved. And he's loved because, you know, he's just, he just emanates compassion. So, you know, it's, I think it's a really nice link, because that's what we're connecting with, so that we can develop that same compassion in ourselves. Because without that, we won't have the energy to complete the Tantra path. And even if we don't complete the Tantra path, we're just happy staying with the deity, with Chenrezig, you know, we can gain a lot of realizations, and we can go almost all the way right up to enlightenment with just that practice. So, you know, it's where you want to go with it. Every mind is different. And just now, I think now is the time, let's talk about Tantra. And, you know, we talk about the principles. When you're in the sutra, we've got those three concentrations, haven't we? We've got the ethics is sort of central, and then concentration and meditation. Well, here, the three principles of Tantra are renunciation, then bodhicitta, and then the view. And the view is realizing emptiness. So we'll start with renunciation. You know, I mean, why do we need renunciation? I did a Lamrim retreat at home not long ago, and I was quite horrified to realize that actually there's a lot of things I like in samsara. And you've got to do, you know, again, use the sutra and all those wonderful meditations, which is why I put the Lamrim meditations book in your links, you know, for things that you can go to and refer to, because that's where you really start to work out, you know, what samsara is about. And yeah, actually, you know, it's not so great, is it? Plus, you need renunciation, because, you know, why else are you going to want to do this practice and reach enlightenment, you know? So renunciation is the first of the principles. And then the bodhicitta, which we've sort of touched on, and we're going to be really sort of expanding through the weekend, is the vitality, the energy, the method behind it. And we need lots of that. You know, you have bodhisattvas in the sutra path, but once we go into Tantra, we call it great compassion. The bodhisattva has great compassion. And what is this great compassion? It spreads to every being, every single, there's nobody left out. And that's why, I mean, a wonderful visualization when you think that these systems were set up so, you know, thousands of years ago, where they only really knew a small amount of the world, that they were expanding their minds to all these realms, you know. And you know, you need compassion to do that, because compassion is boundless. It doesn't have any barriers, you know. So it's the energy of our practice. And then, of course, the whole thing has to be underlined, have a base of this view that everything, every single thing is empty, every phenomena, every person is empty of inherent existence. Now, we've been learning that in the sutra, and we understand it conceptually, and for me it makes complete sense. In fact, nothing else makes any sense, you know. Everything is down to this cause and effect and dependent arising. But, you know, can I stop myself, you know, acting as if I don't, you know, without this self? No. You know, the minute a car comes near to me and nearly pushes me off the road, you know, I'm grabbing hold of myself. And you just think of any of the situations where, you know, you really think I've got to be compassionate, but something happens and, you know, up comes this self. So that's the imprinted self, you know, that's been imprinted for all these, you know, beginningless time. So we're not saying that we come with realization of emptiness to Tantra, but we are saying that we've got an understanding of it. And that's, you know, that's really essential for the entrance into Tantra. The aims of Tantra are, as I said, to clear not only the afflicted delusions, but really clear these imprints. And it's to gain enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. That's the bodhisattva goal, you know. And it's huge. It's really huge. It will definitely soften our hard view of this fixed reality. So that helps us, again, to understand emptiness a little bit more and more as we practice. Realize that everything's interchangeable, everything happens because of cause and effect, and actually, you know, what is this, what is fixed anywhere in the universe? To enter Tantra practice, where you actually arise as the deity, you have to have an initiation. And some people think that's a bit exclusive, but no, there's a real reason for it. Anybody can practice Chenrezig, which is fantastic. All the Tibetans practice Chenrezig. You know, as a Buddha, compassion would be, is open to everyone. But if you want to arise as the deity, then you need the initiation. And the reason for that is you need to connect with a lineage master, someone who has practiced and realized this practice. And it's to protect you and it's to protect the practice. And it's very, very important that when we do the sadhana, if you have not had the initiation, then we just absorb into our heart, but we don't arise. And that's a great meditation, a great concentration. We can go a long, long way with that. But if we want to then move on with it, because it's all in steps, you know, I think we have to learn to walk before we run with this. And I think it's so important to learn the mechanics of it. So when you practice with Chenrezig and you think this really is, you know, connecting, I want to go further with this practice, then you get the initiation where you get the commentary, you get exactly how to do the practice. So, you know, it's like baking a cake. If you go to different people's houses, they'll all do it a different way. But here we need to get the same, we want the same, you know, result. You know, we don't want lots of different results. And that's where the initiation protects us. And it also connects us to the guru, who was given the initiation. And as you all probably know, in Tantra, we have this big emphasis on guru devotion. That I'm going to cover in the second weekend because, as I said, we're going to really explore the compassion side this time. But just to say that the reason for the guru devotion is we're not going to meet these Buddhas, or we will, we're meeting them all the time, but we don't recognize them. And so we need these gurus who've actually realized these deities practiced and are able to instruct us correctly how to do these practices. Because if we don't do it correctly, we're wasting our time, really, and it can be dangerous. We find there's just many, many deities in the Tantra system, from the most peaceful and beautiful to the most wrathful and grotesque. But, you know, that isn't that our minds? You know, so we've got all the Tantras to suit all the different minds, you know. We don't have to have just one deity. We can work with different deities. And most people, once they move into Tantra, do. The structure of the sadhana is usually generally the same, and I am talking from the Tibetan tradition. And you find that in all the long sadhanas, I'm not talking about the short ones, but the short ones will always have the preliminaries. And these are, you know, the purifying the mind, making confession, doing rejoicing, requesting. So we call it the seven limb prayer. So that was always in the sadhana. Let's go through the structure. Then you'll get a graduated path, lam rim, glance meditation, just to remind you of the base that we're working from. And then they'll be making offerings, usually before and sometimes after as well, and before and after you arise as the deity or absorb the deity, making offerings. These are part of the merit creating, you know, method side of it. So merit can be a bit confusing to people, because in the West we think of it as quite competitive. But a lovely teacher, Thubten Chodron, who I've mentioned as a link, because her lam rim meditations are really, really helpful, uses another word for merit. She uses potential. And I think that is exactly what it does. So, you know, we do all these offerings and praise, and we say it's to create merit. It's to create the potential, you know, so that your mind can do all these things. And they do say, you know, the more, you know, we do thousands of prostrations and offerings and offerings, you'll have cleared the ground, and then, you know, you move very, very quickly. So think of it as potential. So we do the making the offerings, and then we do the visualizing of the deity, which is either in front of us, or it's at our heart, or we arise as the deity. And these are all amazing concentrations, visualizations. Whether you're doing it in front or you're arising, you've got the same effects, you know, so you don't need to go running off to get your initiation. If you're practicing with Chenrezig now, it's great practice. And if you're absorbing it into your heart and then sending that out to beings, that's just a superb way of really, really honing your concentration, which is what we need for the practices, for the meditation. Then we have clearing faults, usually straight after the visualization. Excuse me. So we just do a Vajrasattva mantra, and we just clear any faults out. And then we do the dedication, which seals the action, which seals the whole process of what makes it a really virtuous action. Pabongka Rinpoche says that when you practice the sadhana, you're actually practicing all the six perfections at one time. And I find that really inspiring, because, you know, this is part of your training as a bodhisattva. It's certainly necessary for your tantra practice. You're doing it all in one. All those things are happening in one go when you do the sadhana, all the six perfections. So that's very encouraging, I think, and inspiring. And then when we look at Tantra, there's four paths of Tantra. And we start with, and all these are a process, you know, of us getting nearer to the deity. So we have action Tantra, which is also called Kriya Tantra. And that's the analogy of that is approaching the deity. And that's where we are now. That's what we're doing. And Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara is encompassed in action Tantra, but you'll also, he appears in the other tantras as well, in different manifestations. So action Tantra helps us to get nearer to the deity. So it's really an important step. We shouldn't miss it. That's where Chenrezig, this practice, sits. And then the next Tantra is performance Tantra. And the analogy for that is holding hands. So we, you know, we're starting to really touch the essence of the deity. And then we have Yoga Tantra. And the analogy for that is kissing the deity. So we really start to become quite intimate with this this practice. And then we have the highest yoga Tantra, Anuttara Yoga, which the analogy is the union with the consort, which doesn't have to be a physical union. But there we really become one with the deity. So it's a graduated path. As I said, Chenrezig is in action Tantra, but he also exists in the other classes of Tantra. And here in Kriya Yoga, in action Tantra, he sits in the lotus lineage. So this is a bit technical, but you know, these are all, to me, things I would have liked to have known when I started. And he connects to Amitabha, who is like the spiritual father of Chenrezig, and the spiritual sort of father of the lotus lineage, really. And the pure lands that relate to Amitabha are Sukhavati. So that just gives you a little roadmap of where this practice is placed. As we said, anyone can practice, and we know it is the main practice of all Tibetans. So, you know, it's not exclusive. And we don't have to rush on to other tantras because it does really encompass everything. You know, we can go as far as we want just with this sadhana. But just going on with the technical side of it, in Kriya Tantra, action Tantra, you've got two kinds of meditations, and one or two methods, two main methods, which are subdivided, as everything is in Tibetan yoga, loads of lists. But you've got a meditation that's on the deity, which we're going to be doing with a mantra recitation. So, you know, that's exactly what we're going to be doing in the sadhana. And there's also what they call absorptions that are in there. So while you're doing this meditation, you've got the, you've set up the deity in front of you, or absorbed. Then the meditation should always have these six things, the elements in them. And these elements are called deities, so they call them the six deities. But when you look at it, you can see that's going to happen, really, if you're doing it from your heart. So you have empty, the deity of empty. And, of course, that's the emptiness of all phenomena. And then you have the deity of sound, which is the sound of the mantra. These are really what we're concentrating on. So, you know, what our awareness is. And then we have the letter, which is the symbols, you know. And when we come to that, you know, all the teachers I've read have said you don't have to visualize the Tibetan, you know, or Sanskrit syllables. You can do it in the Roman syllables if that suits you. I found over time that actually looking at the syllables, that they do resonate, and they can be simpler to visualize than doing it in Roman letters. But really, if you're more comfortable in seeing them in our, you know, normal sort of time, then you can set Om Mani Padme Hum in your heart with just Roman letters. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. So that's the letter. So we've got empty. We've also got sound. We've got the actual syllables. We've got form, which is, you know, the form of the deity. So we want to try and sharpen up that awareness and visualization. Then we have a thing called seal, which is the mudras. Now, I haven't found the mudras in the simple Chenrezig Sadhana, but when you move on into Tantra, there's all these mudras and the hand mudras and the gestures that are sort of, you know, describing things. And one of the nice things I read about that was, why do they do the mudras? Well, these sadhanas, a lot of them are so long. It's a way of drawing the mind again. You know, it's all about bringing the mind back in, really keeping it on the practice. So when you come to do offerings, you'll do all these lovely, and it's very beautiful. You may have seen them in rituals and sadhana practice. And it helps the flow and just a bit of movement, you know, there's a few reasons for it, but that's what seal is. It's doing the hand mudras. As it happens in this practice, we don't have any. And then sign, and the sign is just that it's one pointed and there's a concentration there. And the sign, you know, that you're keeping the mind there on the practice. So that is really the first method and the one that we're really working with. The second method is meditation on the deity, but without mantra recitation. And that has more concentrations in it. They're quite beautiful, but, you know, again, it's one step at a time. So first we start with meditation on the deity with the mantra recitation. And that's usually the sort of sadhana you will listen to and join in with most of the centers. I've not heard them using the visualizations of the concentrations without mantra, because that goes into fire and sound, and I'm not going to go, I don't want to confuse us. There's always more to do. So those absorptions, it sort of sounds technical as well, but actually they're quite useful little signposts, yeah, while you're meditating. And what is mentioned in the text is the vitality exertion. Again, this is for, I think, more advanced practice, but that's basically the vase breathing, where we hold the breath. And of course, that's what you learn in pranayama. And that's why I realized that, you know, all the pranayama I'd done years ago was really going to be useful in this system. Now, at the, you know, at the stage that we're practicing here, which is a really important stage, because I think it gets skipped by a lot of people. They jump right to the highest yoga tantra. And, you know, this is such a good preparation. And it gives you that concentration and that skill with the visualizations so that you can begin to get some clarity. So I think that sort of sums up the mechanics of action tantra. And I think I'll just open it up to you now, guys. And have you got any questions, or can we just have a little bit of open discussion? Because we will take a break at 11:30. So we've got about 10 minutes just for you to ask any questions. You know, if I can't answer them, I'll come back to you. Or just to discuss what we've been going through. Think about it. I will just mention what it is not, Tantra. It is not an external god, something out there existing from its own side. I think when I was thinking of it, what is it and what is it not? Well, it is not that. And I will just mention the vows. You can practice, do this practice without any vows at all. When you take the initiation, it's normally done. Ah, we got Olia. I can't see you at the moment, Olia, just a moment. When we take the initiation, we do it with the Pratimoksha vows. Anna, Olia, please ask your question, dear.
Thank you, Lou. It is quite a lot to absorb, but I think it's very helpful. So before we take initiation for Tantra, is it a requirement to take the layperson's vows? And also, is there have to be some other preparation before you take Tantra initiation, in other words, or any some other, you know, requirements before you take Tantra initiation? And also, what would one need to do to ensure that they take it with the person? Well, yeah, very difficult to formulate, I'm sorry. I guess the question is, how do you know that you take it with the right person? How do you work this out? Yes.
I understand. Okay. Well, the first question, really, I just come to really on the vows. We're talking action Tantra here. To practice it, as I said, you don't need any vows. And what they say is that you should be have the preparation or the ability to take the vows when you come to the initiation. And at the initiation in action Tantra, in this part of Tantra, is that you take the Pratimoksha vows. So I didn't read anything that said you had to have the lay vows. It said as long as you're a suitable vessel. And that brings us then to your second question. If you really, I'll put the name of this book, but if you want to know really how it technically works, this is the book. I had to study this when we were doing Grounds and Paths, and it won't be for everybody, but if you really want to know how it works, it's Kirti Tenchep Rinpoche, and it's the Principles of Buddhist, and it goes Principles of Buddhist Tantra, and it goes through all the different tantras, and you can see how it comes together. So from that source, which is the recommended source for study, there's no mention of before the initiation having to have any vows whatsoever. You know, that's why, you know, every Tibetan practices Chenrezig practice. So it's open to everybody. When you take the initiation, it is presumed you are a suitable vessel for taking the pratimoksha vows. And that leads us on to what you were saying about how do we know who is the suitable initiator, guru to go to. This really steps into guru devotion and our whole relationship with the guru in Tantra. But just briefly, if you look at the Lam Rim, there's a whole set of qualities that the guru, the lineage master should have, is required to have, and also the disciple, you know, the person taking the initiation. You will find that in the Lam Rim and in Lama Tsongkhapa's graduated path. Having said that, you know, we are not in a monastic situation, are we? Where we get to know these masters really well, and these masters, you know, come now are so available. You know, they're coming from all directions. We amazing time, and that Tantra is so available to us. Amazing time. So we maybe don't have the opportunity to check out. In the way that they had in the monasteries, but it can be done, and you know we have so much information available now online that we can check out the lineages, check out the spiritual masters, but very much it's to do with, you know, your relationship to the practice as well. If it really resounds to you with you, then you will find the lineage master. And you've got to remember that master is just a vessel. So we have had occasions and situations where some of our spiritual masters have not manifested perfect activities. But, you know, the way you deal with that is they're still a vessel, you know. And they're a vessel for the Dharma. And for sure, if they're giving initiations and they have practiced to the point of arising as the deity, and that's for sure, because you cannot do these initiations without that. And they will all practice and go into what they call approximation retreat before they give initiations. This is part of the requirements. It's very, very set out. So you know that when they come to the initiation, that they have practiced up to the point of arising as the deity, and very clearly, you know, and actually, you know, realizing the deity, many of them. Yeah. Does that answer enough without going deeply into the guru devotion, which we are going to do in the next weekend retreat on this, because it's a whole huge subject, and also how we relate, you know, to the guru and how that relates to the deity. But does it answer your question for now, Olya?
Yes, Lou. No, thank you very much. That's great. I guess the only thing that I it's not yet clear is whether. So you laid out some of the aspects, such as you know, it has to be basically a lineage master. Does this mean that this has to be a particular level of mastery, or yeah? So I guess the question is, I might know that this person could be a practitioner. Maybe I might not necessarily work out whether they are a master necessarily. So yeah, I guess that's where I find that there's might be a difficulty in as much as information as you have in connection with someone you have, but at the same time, you know, and you know that they're practicing a bit, but how would you know that they're master of that as such? I guess that's my question. And that may be something that we can answer further down the line, but that's,
I'm quite certain, Olya, that the lineage masters, they're called lineage masters because, you know, it's been a direct lineage, right, you know, going right back to the Buddha on these practices. And I'm quite certain that within the Tibetan tradition, that these lineage masters have taken, you know, initiation, they've practiced up to the point of realizing the deity, and they have been enabled to pass that lineage on to us. And I'm quite confident of that, because within the system, although we have occasions of manifestations of strange behavior, it happens. But I would say they've done the best within the system to protect the lineage. And you know, that's why you have the initiation as well, because that's all part of protecting it. So it doesn't, you know, so it doesn't become a Chinese whisper that goes round and round and round and gets diluted and becomes non-effective. Okay, I think we've got to take a break now, because after the break, we're actually going to begin with the long sadhana. And, you know, you should go have a cup of coffee or just have a little rest, and then we'll see you back here in 10 minutes. Is that okay? Lovely. Thank you. Thank you very much. See you in 10. Okay. I think welcome back, everybody. Okay, Wendy, you're muted, dear.
Yeah, everything's cool. Go for it.
Okay, do you need to start the recording?
It was only on pause and it has now started again, so it's fine. Thank you very much.
So welcome back. I hope you had a nice break. And now we're just going to get ready to do the sadhana, the long sadhana. And don't worry, you know, you're not used to it. It's something you haven't done, so it might seem just a little bit clunky at first, but we're going to do it today and we're going to do it tomorrow. And we're also going to use the sadhana as a way to explore our tantra practice. Just as advice, I'd say that throughout the sadhana, if you can use your visualization and imagination, that's important. Try to dispel with ordinary, you know, ordinary perception. For me, I think the main thing is practicing with sincerity, you know, a real wish. To do the practice to benefit all beings. And, you know, as long as you've got a heart of sincerity, even if your visualizations aren't really, really clear, this is what matters. And I think, you know, as Paula says, we need to work from our heart, not from our head on this one. And, you know, also to have an awareness, just a gentle awareness that we've built up, you know, over the years, of this emptiness, you know, the emptiness of inherent existence, so that we don't grasp at it, because, you know, it's very, it can become very exciting in Tantra. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the deity becomes this solid reality, and then whoops, you know, ego's back on the train, and, you know, we're dragging along all our delusions. So, you know, we really keep it all soft. This is why we work with the subtle body. And there's no grasping. So even if the visualizations aren't clear, you just feel that it's there. That's really enough. You know, I mean, then we can expand that. And that takes the practice. That's the, you know, the mechanics and the concentration side of it. So what I thought we'd do is just for a couple of minutes, if you remember the breathing we were doing this morning in a nice sitting position, the breath, as we found, takes us, you know, into a nice sort of subtle, safe, open space. And that's where we want to be working from in Tantra. But it's also really useful when you get tired in a long sadhana. If you just do a nice full breath, everything gets refreshed. And also when you're doing the visualizations, and, you know, they just want to sharpen the focus a little bit, just a gentle breath can refresh, you know, and just bring a little bit of sharpness to it. So it's really useful. And you know, it gives you some energy, some vitality. Some of these practices can be quite long. I'm going to sort of talk you through a lot of this, but some of the prayers we need to do together. But the visualizations you don't need to read. I'll just talk you through it. So let's just start with some gentle breathing. If you do know how to do alternate nostril breathing, we'll do some of that. I wanted to cover that this morning, but I think we spent a good time on the full breath. So if you can just settle your mind into the body that's on this cushion. And then just take your mind to the breath. And gently focusing on the in and out breath in its normal rhythm. And then just deepening the breath into that fuller breath. And it doesn't have to be strained, but just exploring that three parts of the breath and really opening the body out just to your own pace. We'll do a couple of minutes of that practice. Grounding us. Directing our awareness. Very much softening the body, softening the edges. And while you continue with that breathing, we'll make the motivation. And our motivation in this practice today will be to make a strong connection through His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, who is a living master. We make that connection to His heart, to the essence, to the Buddha of compassion. And that's our motivation, because we want to help all sentient beings. This is the reason we practice this Dharma. Now in that space, just gently let go of the breathing, but stay in that nice soft space, that safe place. And we set up the refuge field. And this can be your own personal arrangement, what you're used to, familiar with. But the elements are always the same. We have Buddha Shakyamuni. Can place at His heart, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and then any other lineage masters, the Dharma, the texts of the Dharma, glowing. And all our teachers, our present day teachers, and gurus, When I say teachers, I can go back right to your mother. To all those people who've been special, supporting and teaching you. And then we think about all these sentient beings that we're doing the practice for, and we visualize them surrounding us. Family, friends, enemies, strangers, all the realms. And we go for refuge. We say this three times. To the Guru, I go for refuge. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dharma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. To the Guru, I go for refuge. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dharma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. And just feel the blessings of the refuge field cascading down, blessing all beings, including yourself. And then generating bodhicitta again. We do this three times and really feel this from our heart. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit from giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit from giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit from giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So sending that love out, touching all sentient beings. And then we recite the four immeasurable thoughts again three times. Here we're using the italics. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from desire for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from desire for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from desire for friends and hatred for enemies. And now we're purifying the place. We're visualizing the ground and all universes as pure. Everywhere may the ground be pure, free of the roughness of pebbles and so forth. May it be in the nature of lapis lazuli, and as smooth as the palm of one's hand. Blessing the offerings, here we visualize vast oceans and oceans of clouds of offerings above our heads. May human and divine offerings, actually arranged and mentally created, clouds of finest Samantabhadra offerings, fill the entire space with mantra, with clouds. May human and divine offerings, actually arranged and mentally created, clouds of finest Samantabhadra offerings, fill the entire space with clouds. And then as we say the mantra, we keep the visualization of just vast amounts of offering. Because, you know, we're so grateful for these practices. So now we have the offering cloud mantra, and we say this three times, sending out offerings. And we can do that from our heart as well. And what we call offering goddesses, going out from the heart. So, you know, make it as big and as vast as you can. Om Namo Bhagavati Bhadrasara Pramadana Tathagataya Hate Samyaksambuddhaya Tayata Om Bhadri Bhadri Mahabhadri Mahatehya Bhadri Mahavidya Bhadri Mahabodhicitta Bhadri Mahabodhi Mando Pasamkramanam Bhadri Savakama Avarana Vishudana Bhadri Soha. Om Namo Bhagavati Vajrasara Pramadana Tathagataya Ahate Samyaksambuddhaya Tayata Om Vajra Vajra Maha Vajra Maha Teja Vajra Maha Vidya Vajra Maha Bodhicitta Vajra Maha Bodhi Mando Pasamkramana Vajra Savakama Abharana Vishudana Vajra Soha. Om Namo Bhagavati Vajrasara Pramadana Tathagataya Ahate Samyaksambuddhaya Tayata Om Vajra Vajra Maha Vajra Maha Teja Vajra Maha Vidya Vajra Maha Bodhicitta Vajra Maha Bodhi Mando Pasamkramana Vajra Savakama Abharana Vishudana Vajra Soha. Send from your heart to all the Buddhas, remembering that the sender, the action, and the receiver, all empty. By the power of the truth of the three rare sublime ones, the blessings of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the great wealth of the completed two collections, and the sphere of phenomena being pure and inconceivable, may these piles of clouds of offerings arising through transformation by the Bodhisattvas, Arya, Samantabhadra, Manjushri, and so forth, unimaginable, inexhaustible, equaling the sky, arise and in the eyes of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the Ten Directions be received. So we really feel this is happening. And then we have the main practice where we set up the front generation. And all the description is here in the sadhana. I'll just add little bits here and there that might help. But the first line leads us into emptiness meditation. So in the space of the Dharmakaya of great spontaneous bliss, so in this empty space, we just expand our mind. It just goes far as the extent of the universe is and beyond. Clarity, awareness, in the midst of billowing clouds of magnificent offerings, upon a sparkling jeweled throne, supported by 8 snow lions, on a seat composed of a lotus in bloom, the sun and the moon. Sit supreme, exalted Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of compassion, assuming the form of a monk, wearing saffron coloured robes. O my Vajradhara master, having all 3 ways, holy Losan Tenzin Gyatso. Just spend time to establish this above the crown of your head. His Holiness. Just a light body, not solid. Don't worry about the details. The description adds to this, and just feel his kind presence in the room with all of us. Endowed with a glowing fair complexion and a radiant smiling face, your right hand at your heart, in a gesture expounding the Dharma, holds the stem of 1 white lotus that supports a book and a sword. Your left hand, resting in meditative pose, holds a 1,000 spoked wheel. Just try to add those details. Maybe you just see the hand or just a part. Maybe in focus and then fading, but just be gentle. Let the visualization come. And if there's no details, just really feel the presence. Light. Compassion. You are clothed in 3 saffron robes of a monk and are crowned with the pointed golden hat of a pandit. So there we have all the details of the Dalai Lama as we know him. And there he is above our heads. Lotus, moon seat, the throne. Holding the book, holding the lotus with the book and sword. And then just keeping this visualization awareness present. It'll come and go in focus, that's fine. Your aggregates, sensory spheres, senses, objects, and your limbs are a mandala complete with the 5 Buddhas and their consorts, male and female bodhisattvas and wrathful protectors, encircled by a halo of 5 brilliant colours. We can really set up that aura, feel the essence that is the Dalai Lama, the essence of compassion, the essence of all the Buddhas. My master is seated in full Vajra posture, sending forth a network of cloud-like self-emanations to tame the minds all sentient beings. So light is going out from that light body, illuminating the darkness, illuminating all of space. Within his heart sits Avalokiteshvara, a wisdom being with 1 face and 4 arms. His upper 2 hands are placed together. His lower 2 hands hold a crystal rosary and a white lotus. So at the heart of the Dalai Lama, His Holiness, You can just start with a pearl of light right in that heart center, that sort of empty light body, and just expand it into the forearmed, chin raising, Avalokiteshvara. Just as much as you can do without tightening, without grasping. He is adorned with jeweled ornaments and heavenly raiment. Over his left shoulder, an antelope skin is draped, and cross-legged, he is seated on a silver moon and lotus. The white syllable Hri, a concentration being, is at his heart. Try and place right in the heart of the Dalai Lama, and then in the heart of Avalokiteshvara, the syllable Hri. And if you don't know the syllable, just a light at his heart, beaming out. It emits brilliant coloured light in all 10 directions. So think of the 10 directions and have the light just shining out. On my master's brow is a white arm, within his throat a red R, and at his heart a blue hum, from which many lights shine out in myriad directions, inviting the three jewels of refuge to dissolve into him, transforming him into the collected essence of the objects of refuge. So we just connect with those chakra centers, those syllables that are in His Holiness, the light body of His Holiness, at His crown, white arm. Really connect with that coming from His forehead down to your forehead, at His throat. The red R connects to your throat chakra. And at the heart, we just focus on the hum and soften the focus on Avalokiteshvara, so that the hum sends out light in all directions, blue light, touching your heart. Now we go to the seven limb prayer, and although our focus is sort of softening, we say what's called, we drop the divine identity a little. Be aware that that presence is still there above your head. As we make prostrations, your liberating body is fully adorned with the signs of a Buddha. Your melodious speech, complete with all 60 rhythms, flows without hesitation. Your vast, profound mind, filled with wisdom and compassion, is beyond all conception. I prostrate to the wheel of these three secret adornments of your body, speech, and mind. So sincerely offering prostrations mentally towards our Master. Thank you so much for being here. We make offerings, material offerings of my own and others. These can come from your heart. The actual objects of those that I visualize, body and wealth, and all virtues amassed throughout the three times, I offer to you upon visualized oceans of clouds like Samantra Bhadra's offerings. So we really feel this is happening. And we make our confession directly to all these beings, including His Holiness. My mind being oppressed by the stifling darkness of ignorance, I have done many wrongs against reasons and vows. Whatever mistakes I have made in the past, with a deep sense of regret, I pledge never to repeat them. and without reservation, I confess everything to you within the unobservable that is emptiness. So just feeling the regret for the non-virtuous actions that we've done over this lifetime and countless lifetimes. Resolving to try to do better. We will use the remedy, the antidotes, and take refuge. Rejoicing from the depths of my heart, I rejoice in the enlightening deeds of the sublime masters and in the virtuous actions, past, present, and future, performed by myself and others and by ordinary and exalted beings of the three sacred traditions. And we request, I request you to waken every living being from the sleep of ordinary and instinctive defilements with the divine music of the Dharma's pure truth, resounding with the melody of profoundness and peace and in accordance with the dispositions of your various disciples. I entreat you to firmly establish your feet upon the indestructible Vajra throne in the indissoluble state of Avam, until every sentient being gains the calm breath of joy in the state of final realization, unfettered by the extremes of worldliness or tranquil liberation. I dedicate fully my virtuous actions of all the three times so that I may receive continuous care from a master and attain full enlightenment for the benefit of all, through accomplishing my prayers, the supreme deed of Samantabhadra. And then we make the mandala offering. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. This offering I make of a precious jeweled mandala, the moon, together with other precious offerings, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our body, speech, and mind. O my masters, my yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith, accepting these out of your boundless compassion, send forth to me waves of your inspiring strength. So really feel the blessings pouring down. Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Nariyatayami. Now drawing back into the visualization that's above your head. His Holiness at his heart, Avalokiteshvara. From the Hri in the heart of Avalokiteshvara, seated in the heart of my venerable master, flow streams of nectars and rays of five colors, penetrating the crown of my head and eliminating all obscurations, endowing me with both common and exclusive attainments. So while we hold that visualization of these blessings pouring down through the crown of our head, we say the mantra that is the mantra for His Holiness. Om A Guru Vajradhara Bhadra Raja Manjushri Bhadrindra Sumati Janasasana Dharasamudra Sri Bhadrasawa Siddhi Hum Hum. So this we can say, recite quietly to ourselves. We'll just do this for a few moments. Om A Guru Vajradhara Bhadra Raja Manjushri Bhadrindra Sumati Janasasana Dharasamudra Sri Bhadrasawa Siddhi Hum Hum. Om Guru Bhadradara Bhadra Raja Mandra Sri Bhadrindra Sumati Janashasana Dara Samudra Sri Bhadra Sawa Siddhi Om Om. So keeping our awareness connected to the presence of His Holiness. Requesting to actualize the graduated path. Bestow on me your blessings to be devoted to my master with the purest thoughts and actions, gaining confidence that you, compassionate Holy Master, are the basis of temporary and everlasting bliss, for you elucidate the true path, free from all deception, and embody the totality of refuges, past number. Bestow on me your blessings to live a life of Dharma, undistracted by the illusory preoccupations of this life. Well, I know that these leisures and endowments can never be surpassed by countless treasures of vast wealth, and that this precious form, once attained, cannot endure, for at any moment of time it may easily be destroyed. Bestow on me your blessing to cease actions of non-virtue and accomplish wholesome deeds by being always mindful of the causes and effects from kind and harmful acts, while revering the three precious jewels as the ultimate source of refuge and the most trustworthy protection from the unendurable fears of unfortunate rebirth states. Bestow on me your blessings to practice the three higher trainings, motivated by firm renunciation gained from clear comprehension that even the prosperity of the Lord of the Devas is merely a deception, like a siren's alluring spell. Bestow on me your blessings to master the oceans of practice, cultivating immediately the supreme enlightened motivation by reflecting on the predicament of all mother sentient beings who have nourished me with kindness from beginningless time, and now are tortured while ensnared within one extreme or the other, either on the wheel of suffering or in tranquil liberation. Bestow on me your blessings to generate the yoga, combining mental quiescence with penetrative insight, in which the 100,000-fold splendor of voidness, forever free from both extremes, reflects without obstruction in the clear mirror of the immutable meditation. Bestow on me your blessings to observe in strict accordance all the vows and words of honor that form the root of powerful attainments. Having entered through the gate of extremely profound Tantra by the kindness of my all-proficient master, bestow on me your blessings to attain within this lifetime the blissful great seal of the union of body and wisdom. Through severing completely my all-creating karmic energy with wisdom's sharp sword, of the non-duality of bliss and voidness. So there we had a glance meditation of the Lam Rim graduated path. And now we merge with the spiritual master. So again, just use your breath to refresh your posture, refresh the visualization. Holiness on the throne, lotus and throne, and seat, Vadakeshvara at his heart, the Hri at the heart, Vadakeshvara, feeling the presence of the crown of your head. Really connecting to that. From your heart. My supreme master requested in this way now blissfully descends through the crown of my head and dissolves in the indestructible point, the drop at the center of my eight-petaled heart. So just take some moments to feel that absorption. Into the hollow space of your heart. Now my master re-emerges on a moon and lotus. Feel this happening in the space. Your heart, chakra. In his heart sits Avalokiteshvara, within whose heart is the letter Hri, encircled by a rosary of the six-syllable mantra, the source from which streams of nectar flow. Eliminating all obstacles and every disease, and expanding my knowledge of the scriptural and insight teachings of the Buddha. So just expanding out with light from that space at your heart, from that visualization. And then receiving the blessings. Thus I receive the entire blessings of the victorious ones, teachings of the Buddhas and their children. So feel the light returning. So it's like a pulse. Just pulsing out. And back to the heart center. Radiant lights again shine forth to cleanse away defects from all beings and their environments. So really send the light out across the universes from your heart. From the heart of His Holiness, within whose heart is Avalokiteshvara, within whose heart is the syllable, shining brightly like a pearl. Illuminating all the darkness. In this way, I attain the supreme yogic state, transforming every appearance, sound, and thought into the three secret ways of the exalted ones. And so with this visualization, we now take our mala, or if we haven't got our mala, we all know the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra. And we try and sit at the heart of Avalokiteshvara, in the heart of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who's in your heart. Try and be in the center of the Hri and shine out through the mantra syllables. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Sending rays out from the mantra, touching all beings. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. So feel that the rays from the mantra at your heart. You're sat inside that rosary of syllables. Has reached out and touched every being. Drawing back into the heart now. We make purification of any mistakes done in the ritual. We do the Vajrasattva mantra. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Denapatishta Dridami Bawasuta Kayami Bawasu Pakayami Bawana Rakti Mibawasa Siddhi Me Prayacha Sawakama Sutra Me Shriam Chittam Sriam Kura Hung, Ha 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 Ho, Bhagavan Savatata Gata Vajra Mami Mantra Vajra Baha Mahasama Yasapa Ahum Pei. And so although there's all these other visualizations happening, we can still feel a cleansing light throughout that sort of sense body that is our body, just cleansing all the faults, all the errors. Like a cascade of golden light. And then we make dedication. We share the benefits of the practice with all beings. In the glorious 100,000-fold radiance of the youthful moon of wholesome practice, from the blue jasmine garden of the victorious treasure mine's method of truth, may the seeds of explanation and accomplishment germinate and flower across the earth. May the ensuing auspiciousness beautify everything until the limit of the universe by flying high above the three realms, the never-vanishing great jewel banner of religious and secular rule, laden with millions of virtues and perfect accomplishments. May myriad wishes for benefit and bliss pour down. Having banished afar the dark weight of this era's degeneration, across the extent of the earth, sapphire held by a celestial maiden. May all living creatures overflow with spontaneous gaiety and joy in the significant encompassing brilliance of happiness and bliss. In short, O protector, by the power of your affectionate care, may I never be parted from you throughout the rosaries of my life. May I proceed directly with an ease gone beyond effort unto the great city of unification, the all-powerful cosmic state itself, which is Buddhahood. We're sending those wishes out sincerely from our heart. We conclude with the auspicious verse, by the force of the immaculate compassion of the victorious ones and their children, may everything adverse be banished for eternity throughout the universe. May all favorable omens become increasingly auspicious, and may whatever is of virtue in the round of this existence or in tranquil liberation flourish and grow brighter like a new moon waxing full. And just to conclude, we make a prayer of dedication just to seal the action. Like my Lama, the Buddha Bhagawan, who gave away at the time of the path with mighty courage, royalty, children, students, and everything, may I be able to utterly give away without regret. May the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, that has not arisen, arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. May the wisdom realizing emptiness that has not arisen arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. And out of our great gratitude for His Holiness the Dalai Lama, we give a long life prayer. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good, all powerful Chenrezig, Tenzin Gyatso. Please, please remain until samsara ends. And we will conclude our session here. So now it's time for lunch. And after we've had lunch, if you can think about any questions you might have about regarding the sadhana, and we'll also have a discussion about it. Have a really wonderful break. Remember, you know, the Dalai Lama and Avalokiteshvara, who we connected to, care for them in your heart, and you know, just stay in the zone if you can. and we'll see you at 3 o'clock your time, is it, Wendy?
Yes, yes, it is. Yes.